Good morning. It's coming up on 16 in front of 6 o'clock, 49 degrees. The WIB Wake Up Show underway for this 22nd of June. June Dairy Month, kind of winding down. I see the annual Chippewa County Dairy Dinner is coming up tomorrow night. Jason Cairns on the line with us early morning from Eau Claire. Got you on a minute early this morning, so there you go.
Very good.
But you were ready to go. Yeah, you're ready to go. So
yeah, I'm always ready to go. I just sit here and wait for you to call.
You had a strong opinion on Facebook yesterday.
First time ever.
The Abeka homeschooling curriculum. Not a big fan.
Oh. No, you know, it was an interesting thread. So we homeschooled our kids for a number of years and used a variety of materials. And I read through this thread yesterday, and the person who shared the thread talked about a lot of the nationalistic ideas that appear in the Abeka criteria, in the Abeka materials, and particularly in their government materials. And I think one phrase that stood out to me as particularly bothersome was, there was something that said in one of them that before Christians came to the United States or came to North America, Native Americans didn't care about the well-being of other people.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, that was a punch in the gut, thinking about how we probably used Abeka materials at some point. But it very clearly presents one perspective on things like government. And I think one of the points I made was, you know, that there's so often this concern about indoctrination in public schools. And what we fail to acknowledge is that sometimes the materials that are used, for example, in homeschooling are also very biased. And in many cases, probably not accurate.
Hmm.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
But I was just going to say, you know, it's important for us to ask those questions. Oz Guinness, who's a British writer, British Christian writer,
interviewed him more than once on Front Page.
Yeah, you know, one of the things he talked about with his kids was developing the practice of learning to spot the lie. And
a lot of times with commercials, I think is kind of how they played
right,
it. Right.
Yep. Yeah. Exactly, and I think commercials are the most obvious way we can look for that. But I think there are other ways we can as well. And it's not just for culture out there, but what are the things we're engaging with where there maybe isn't presented as accurately as what we might think.
We've had this conversation before, but it's worth revisiting as long as we've gone down the road here a little bit with this, Jason. And I mean that in terms of nationalism, and I think a lot of people raise this in terms of the past election. I think my wife and I were reading a book which had pointed out the In God We Trust and also One Nation Under God and the Pledge were both put in, I think, in the 50s, if I hear that right. And so, yeah. You know, for some who think, oh, that was always the case. And so, I mean, just the idea of sorting through what's okay and what goes too far in terms of being grateful to God for your country, and then
right. As
it seemed like, as I read a little, not all, of what you said about this, with this homeschooling curriculum that you think you may have used, and we may have too, because we've done our mix of homeschooling, but the idea of what goes too far in terms of indoctrination, I guess, or
right. Where,
what makes, you know, and I think we always wrestle with that, and it's an important question, what goes too far?
Yeah, you know, and I don't know that I have a good answer for that. I think sometimes I differentiate between patriotism and nationalism, you know, and I think it's good to celebrate and enjoy the country we live in. But when it becomes idolatrous, that's when we start to see problems.
Right. And I think sometimes, I mean, there can be disputes that even talk about, is America the greatest nation on earth now, or is it the greatest nation in the history of the world?
Right.
I think we could come to maybe this agreement. The world is a mess. I mean, it is really.
Yeah.
And trying.
You know, go ahead.
No. Well, I mean, that pretty much.
I was going to say, you know, there's a phrase that my friend Brad and I used to say, and that was, people are messy, and that includes me. And maybe we can extend that to say, countries are messy, and that includes us.
No, that is true. Yeah.
So.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right. All right. Well, and then I guess lastly, we'll finish with this, but I mean, in terms of whether it's this example from yesterday for you or anything in our lives, like, we're thinking people, hopefully. And so just because we have held to certain views or used certain materials in the past doesn't mean you're locked in forever. I mean, right? I mean, and you've talked openly about changes you've had, and I think it's because you read and you think. And so can you say a final word about that, I guess?
Yeah, you know, and I think as Christians, we are called to be thinking people. And I think that includes looking internally as well. You know, again, coming back to the question, is it possible I'm wrong? You know, and I think to be able to understand that God is a God of truth, and we can follow him wherever he leads us, and to not be afraid to do so.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for being there to answer the call Monday through Friday and to go on the radio and talk about whatever. So I appreciate it.
Sure.
All right. Our buddy Jason Cans from jasoncans.com. We will dive into letters to the beloved. We just didn't this morning. So... All right, so what is our subject this morning?
Well, should a first date include food? I would say should any date include food? A date implies that you're trying to connect, you're at your best, you're probably dressed up. Married people have dates. People who've been dating a long time have dates. But it's very tricky when you go to a restaurant. You have to be careful what you order. I know women are very self-conscious about this. So a survey has found that almost a third of adults believe a first date should include food. Two in five have assessed a date by the way they eat, such as chewing loudly, while a fifth would judge someone if they asked for a doggy bag for leftovers.
They would judge someone for that?
Oh, see, you and Phil, you would both get a doggy bag.
Sure.
When you're on a
if you go
first
to a lot
date,
of restaurants,
it's like, what do I care? I'm so rich. I don't need these leftovers. Okay. That's the image you're going for.
That thought never crosses my mind. So,
but see, I'm thrifty. So is my husband. And for sure, if there's a bone, we need to bring that. But not attractive look, I guess. You get judged for that.
So I can remember. I'd be interested. Your first date with Phil.
It was at a Christmas party.
Was there food?
Okay. So it was a potluck. I brought spanakopita, this little spinach phyllo Greek dish.
Yeah.
He takes the dish from me. He puts it in the back seat of the car and puts a seatbelt around it.
You had to know you were marrying him right there. I mean, good grief. Yeah,
like,
for sure.
To treat my dish with such reverence.
Yes.
I'm like, whoa, this is the one.
He's careful. Very good. Food was involved in my first date with Peggy, too, because we had gotten to know each other better in a group doing a study on the book, I Kissed Dating Goodbye. He talked about don't date, but have friendship deepening activities.
Absolutely.
So she brought a good friend over who was studying for a final, and it was a Packer Saturday NFL game. So we were going to watch that game. And
of
then
course you were.
Before she left, I made spaghetti. So food was involved. And so we survived. I mean, that's another question. Should you cook on a first date?
Okay. Well, it says foods to avoid are pizza, steak, ice cream, lasagna, salad, and burger. So if she loved you while eating your spaghetti with it flopping all over, it's got staying power.
WWIB, the WIB Wake Up Show, Mike Donahue, and we love that tune. Kayla's been playing it. I've been playing it. We love that tune. And I love what he says there. I got to be honest with you. And we got Mike Cahoon already in here this morning from Hope Village. But the way it was set up with the story behind the song, and that was the first time I've heard Mike give us the explanation with it, that one of his, if not his very best friend, is an addictions counselor, and he talked about 12-step groups. And I think Philip Yancey's written about this in Christianity Today, and I've talked about it in terms of just 12-step groups in the church. And 12-step groups is where I've heard about rigorous honesty.
Right.
I didn't hear about that in the church. I really didn't.
Right.
But it's like the way Mike set it up so beautifully there in terms of his addiction counselor friend saying, just the power of God and just the kingdom of God there where people are so honest about their brokenness and vulnerable. And that's what we need in the church. And I don't know how we get there. But that's the message I get out of that tune from Mike that we just heard all together, which is we need to bring, you know, not our best, not our image, but our truth. Right.
Well, without rigorous honesty, you're not going to get your need for repentance.
Yeah.
And repentance is what leads you to the gospel and your need for God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So very good stuff. All right, we've talked about him, and he is here. Mike Cahoon from the Hope Village, and they got the 9 tiny houses and looking to go from there, and all of our tips and donations with the picnic in the parking lot on Thursday between 11 and 7, benefiting Hope. You were a benefactor last year. Welcome back.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah. Bring us up to speed. How are you, and what's the latest with Hope Village and the tiny houses?
Yeah, so I'm doing fine. I just got off a week vacation.
Nice.
So
Northern Minnesota.
Northern Minnesota, visited my sister.
Did you catch some fish?
We caught a few, not as many as you would like, and they're always much smaller than you're hoping for.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, just getting back from vacation. And Hope Village, I think you all know that we started in 2016, and one of our goals was to
Can you believe it's been 5 years?
Yeah, it went fast.
Wow.
Yeah. And one of our goals was to purchase a piece of property so that we could actually have a village of tiny houses and support that village and the guests that stay in our tiny houses with a few more conveniences, like having a central building with a shower and laundry facilities and those type of things. So we just purchased that property this past winter, and we're in the midst of planning to have it developed.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sort of embarrassed that I didn't know much about this organization. I'm completely captivated by the concept of, first of all, letting people have their own space, you know, but not leaving them alone. When I asked you about, well, what will the money be used for? You were talking about really helping people get their driver's license. So you're coming alongside. You're not just say, plunking them in a little house and saying, there you go. I mean, this is a way to really bring somebody from being alone on the street to having a community.
Yeah, really. That's what it's all about. We it's more than just sheltering. So we do have the 9 tiny houses, and often that's what we're known for, is housing the homeless in those tiny houses.
Mm-hmm.
But we also match each house up with 2 mentors and a navigator. And the mentors and the navigators help our guests mm-hmm. work through what's called a secure living plan.
Wow.
And the secure living plan has 3 goals. To help them find an income sufficient to find permanent housing, to get them reconnected with their health resources.
Mm-hmm.
And oftentimes that's spiritual health.
Right.
Not only physical health and mental health, but spiritual health or even relational health. And then the third thing, the last thing, is to help them find that permanent housing.
I'm dazzled. I think that's just the best possible thing you could be, is a friend who not only provides you, you know, the physical comforts, but that emotional, spiritual, and financial support to change lives.
Yeah, absolutely. Many of the guests do become friends. I have a friend that was a guest at one time, and I play pickleball with him almost every morning. And on maybe Sunday nights, he'll stop over the house and we'll play ping pong.
Wow.
So, you know, you build relationships mm-hmm. With the people that you work with. And they're, you know, just people who are down on their luck, perhaps, or they had lost a job or lost their, the gentleman I play pickleball with lost his housing because of a fire.
Wow. Okay.
And we hosted him at Landmark, and just a wonderful, wonderful person.
Mm-hmm. Mike, did you ever imagine, I mean, when this started 5 years ago, it would go like this? I mean, it's been amazing, really.
Yeah. So, you know, this started like on January 1st, 2016, because I sit down and I write my goals out for the year. And I had spent some time with a high school friend that was homeless. We played hockey together.
Mm-hmm.
And so the wheels were turning. And so in my imagination, I saw this.
Right.
But I wasn't sure how it was going to happen.
Uh-huh. Huh.
Well, and you mentioned something about, with the cost of lumber, your budget has increased. Well, not just lumber, the homelessness, the people who have really, with the economy, has increased how much percent?
Yeah, so our budget's increased 400%. But that's mostly because over the last 5 years, we've been really blessed with a number of churches who've hosted the buildings on their site. And that's worked wonderfully. We had 5-year special use permits from the city of Chippewa Falls and from the village of Halley. And those are about to expire. So that's why we purchased the property, so that mm-hmm. we could bring the houses together into this village atmosphere. And of course, that just costs more money when you own a building and yeah. own property.
So it's growing, which means it's alive. It's alive and growing. And we have an opportunity to be a part of it by coming to the parking lot picnic. All the tips are going to your amazing ministry. And it's just a great way to come and dine. And here, you're going to have a tiny house right in our parking lot,
yeah,
correct?
Yeah, we'll have a tiny house here. And we always ask people to take the 10-second tour.
Right. It doesn't take long. It doesn't take long. At a time when we had a story the other day that since the 50s, houses are three times as large as they were in the 50s. And yet we know, talking with my in-laws the other day, families are much smaller. My dad was the youngest of nine. Families were 9, 10, 11 kids, much more often than they are now. But these tiny houses are amazing. And I've been through the tour a couple of times, and including when you brought it last year. So we look forward to it. And our thanks to Demeter's and Holy Donuts, and plus also Marquardt and Edina Realty, saying they'll match $500 as well along the way. Mm-hmm. So we're so grateful to them. Mike, thanks for stopping in. And are you going to actually be here on Thursday, or somebody from the team going to be here?
Yeah, I'm going to be here. Okay. And others from the team will be here.
Fantastic.
Wow, yep. The OG will be here.
Yeah. So, Mike, thank you so much. And we appreciate it. We love partnering with you. You know that. So.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you so much.
Our good brother, Mike Cahoon from Hope Village here on WWIB. Susan, a heart attack guy who slammed energy drinks wants to ban the sales of them to kids.
Okay. Yeah. The world of energy drinks is new to me.
Uh-huh.
I see these little things, but like Red Bull, I've never really uh-huh. gotten into them.
I've had one 5-hour energy that I remember, and it helped I had very limited sleep, and I needed to make sure I stayed awake as I drove a few hours across Texas to catch a plane. And so that's my experience. But I guess, I don't know, you said one of our coworkers gave us one of these seltzer energy drinks.
Right.
I just wasn't thinking of that in the same capacity.
Right. And I think what this guy's point is, what the news item says is a bar owner in the UK who once downed a dozen energy drinks per day is warning parents to be sure their children avoid the dangerous beverages. Okay, he discovered his daughter, Summer, who's 10, had managed to purchase a Monster Energy drink at a convenience store next to her elementary school. So I think that's what it is because I'm thinking, why wouldn't you drink coffee? But really, kids are going to go, and they'll think it's soda. They'll think it's some sort of a drink, and then it has stimulants in it. So I can see this guy's point.
I can feel his concern. On the other hand, reading the story, he would consume 8 to 12 of them a day. I mean, that's a lot.
Okay, he's committed. I can respect that.
And so, and then until he suffered a near-fatal heart attack 4 years ago.
Okay.
And he believes that parents and kids aren't well-educated in the negative impact of energy drinks. That could be the case. I think it's just he was a violator to such an extreme that certainly they should not go that far.
That's
but
right.
Should there be caution? I guess parents need another thing to put on the list for parents to be concerned about.
Yeah, because coffee is yucky. Kids aren't going to drink that much coffee, but something delicious and fruity.